The Fog Podcast is brought to you by Calm Seas Crafts of Hilton Head.
Once again, welcome back to the Fog Podcast. Four old guys coming to you from the beautiful Lennox Studios. My name's Dave Pandisio, and I am joined by two buddies today, Jeff Gibbs.
Hey, Dave, how we doing?
All right, and Norm Broder.
Bondo, I'm here.
All right. So we are back with episode four of the Fog Podcast. We are minus one individual as JT. What we're talking about today is a movie that we shot. And JT actually was in the Army, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
During that time. So he was not part of the movie. So thus, he is absent from today's episode, but still a member of the Fog Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Serve and protect.
But let me tell you, now that we've got three episodes under our belt, I think the podcast is taking off. I mean, the word is just, it's going crazy. And I've been checking the ratings for podcasts. You know, you got Joe Rogan, you got Caller Daddy, you got Smartless. Those are all the top podcasts. And so I'm looking on the rating sheet here. Yeah. And
page one?
Yeah, page one. Nope. We didn't make the top 100. Let's widen it out a little bit. 1,000? No. All right. So we got some work to do, guys.
We got some work to do. We're rising.
But, you know, we are going to do something a little different today. We're going to open up the phone lines, but we also have some emails to read. So if you want to call and have a comment on the Fog Podcast, you can call us at 1-875-364-763-2278. That's 875 Fog Podcast. And while you're doing that, we're going to reach into the email bag. I think, Norm, you've got a stack full of emails there, don't you?
Hold on. I'm going to go into the bag. Let me check it out here. I've got one.
Yeah, okay. You got one.
I got one. Okay. So here we go. The first email is a listener from locally here, Holden, Mass. Mr. Richard Hertz writes, I quote, "I love your podcast, mainly because of the ads." Okay. "We don't get to see your faces," and nobody can see this, so it's parentheses, duh. "It's a podcast. But I have heard that Dave Bondo Pandisio is the cute one among you. Am I right?" Gibby, I'm going to let you take this one.
Well, Richard, I think you're spot on there. I've heard it said many times that Dave has the perfect look, the perfect face for radio, and I think we can all agree with that.
Well, I'm telling you, that sounds like a compliment to me, and I'm going to take that.
Yeah,
I'm going to take it.
Yeah, run with that one, okay?
Reach down there, and what's the next one say?
There's nothing else in the bag.
Oh, so we got one email. All right, well, fine. I see there's some phone calls lighting up. Hi, is the caller there?
Hi, yes. Is this the trading show?
Yeah. Who's calling? What's your name? Where are you calling?
My name is Mary Larry, and I'm from Wellington, Florida. And I have some things I want to sell. Let's see. I have an old... I have a lawnmower. I have some dried up Play-Doh.
Mary,
and some pots and pans.
Mary, this is not the trading.
I'm selling the
Mary
lawnmower for $10.
Mary,
dried up Play-Doh for $5.
Mary, this is
and
not the
pots
trading.
And pans, I'll take your best offer.
This is not the trading show. This is the Fog Podcast.
The what? I've never heard of that.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
I really have some things
Mary,
that I need to get rid of.
Mary, Mary, thank you
Please,
for the call. This
I,
is
I
not the trade. No, this is
room.
Not the trade. I'm going
to
have to hang up on this. Thank you for your call, Mary. Okay. Is the next caller there?
Hi. Yes.
Yeah. What's your name
I'm
and where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Stacy Bracey. I'm calling from Wichita, Kansas.
Stacy, hi. What do you think about the Fog Podcast?
Hi. Yeah. Is this Dr. Dentine?
What?
I'm looking. Yeah, Dr. Dentine from Fog Dentistry. I have a cracked tooth. My dentist retired like a year. Wait, hold on 1 minute. I just got home from work and my dog Rocky.
No.
Just keeps wanting to play.
No.
Hold on a second. Yeah. So Stacy. He retired like a year ago. And I have this cracked tooth. I probably should have been seen a long time ago.
Can she hear me? Can she?
The craziest thing is like it's starting to cause.
How did they get this phone number? Stacy.
It's in the back of my mouth.
Stacy, this is not the dentist's
office. The craziest thing. I
got to hang up. This is not the dentist's office. Thank you. No, thank you for your call. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, it looks like we have another call. And is the caller there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Hi. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Christina Pajmina calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Now, look, have you by chance heard the Fog Podcast?
I have. You have?
You've really heard it? Oh, my gosh. Okay. What do you think?
Yeah. So I listened to the first one, and, you know, I didn't really sit with me. I didn't really like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, then I listened to the second one, and...
Yeah?
I gotta say, I didn't really like that one either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, then...
You listened to the third one.
I did listen to the third one.
Yeah?
I did listen to the...
Okay.
Unfortunately, that one was still not my cup of tea.
So you didn't like any of them?
I'm really sorry.
Oh, no, you know what?
I call in, you know, any sort of...
Yes,
good, right?
I appreciate it because that just means that we'll have to work harder. But thanks for nothing, Christina Pajmina.
I don't know. I mean, we got some work to do, boys.
Yeah, well, you can look at these in different ways.
Okay, so today's episode is we're going back to, what, 1981, the summer?
Yep.
We've talked about the Oz Band. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the spring concert. We talked about the junior high.
Yep.
And our next move was we made a movie.
The silver screen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Logical progression.
Yes. The name of the movie was The Exorcist Blues. And Norm, I mean, you got a little background on the origin on how it happened?
A little, you know, so it was the summer of 81. And I can remember... I think you and I, Bondo, were sitting around one day and we were thinking of ridiculous things to do. And we had just seen the Blues Brothers movie.
Classic.
A year ago, prior year. And we loved it. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be funny to do a little comedy where we take the Blues Brothers movies and mix it with a different genre? And of course, we picked The Exorcist. Logical combination. And so instead of the movie being about a young possessed young girl, what we did is we said, well, we'll get a young boy possessed by punk music, and the Blues Brothers will show up and do the exorcism.
Yeah.
And convert him to the blues. I mean, come on. Doesn't everybody think that's a tagline right there?
It's a winner.
It's a winner.
Yeah.
So that was the origin genesis of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just took off on itself.
Yeah.
Well, then you had to start casting, right?
Cast.
So as I recall, it was a nationwide search to bring in the top talent for this.
Pan Athol search. Yeah, we had lines. We had a schedule.
But
the cast made the movie.
And how much arm twisting was it to get to? Well, you had your brother, whom we're going to talk to later.
He was young enough that he didn't understand who's not to be paid.
Yeah, we kept it in the family because we got my sister,
your
brother, and we got an outsider who actually has been involved in a lot of our past things that we've done, Mr. Bob Killer Miller.
Yeah.
He was in the movie as well.
Does anybody know where that nickname came from?
Well, like most nicknames, I assume you thought it up. No, you're the nickname guy.
Right? I don't know if I did that one or not. If it is, I don't know. I might have been exaggerating a little bit.
You're the man of Rocket Fuel Buell, right?
Oh, that's right.
Spider
Taroli.
Bondo.
Steel. Nina Simone. Grizz.
I'll take it.
Let's remember now, too, the big movie theater at the time was in Leominster, Massachusetts.
That's right.
Called Sack Cinemas.
That's right.
And when you would go to a movie at the Sack Cinemas, at the very beginning, they'd have this animation where these little guys would come out. They sort of looked like Pez dispensers. They were like a little circle head, and they'd go across the screen. So we thought, hey, can we do a little animation opening, a takeoff on Sack Cinemas? Which we did.
We did.
And we called it Septic Cinemas. And we had three little Pez dispenser looking guys with our names on it, Jeff, Norm, Dave, and three toilets. And we actually did stop action photography, and the animation was, it came out so good. The little guys come out, they sit on the toilets, and we had
flush, flush, flush.
Flush, flush, flush. And it said Septic Cinemas. And that's how the movie opened.
Which I remember doing that in our front walkway.
Yes, yeah, we laid it down on the ground, and
I mean, that animation was way out there. I mean, it was reminiscent of Star Wars in some ways.
I'm telling you, I mean, we could have been hired by Disney, you know, with that animation.
But that was a good start. Yeah. That was the kickoff.
That was a very good start.
And we should say we were using, you'll know, what kind of cameras? They were old.
It's up on the wall of the studio that we are in right now. It's still there.
It
was a Super 8. I forget the brand, but it's right over there. I just can't see the brand.
So
it's still there.
This was black and white, right?
No, it was color.
It was color, but
no sound.
No sound. That's
no
it.
Sound.
Yeah, no sound.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
So we had to go all through. Well, Norman and I got our Blues Brothers outfit. So Norman and I were Jake and Elwood Blues. We had to go to like a thrift store.
Oh, totally.
Or something
Where else can you buy a completely black old suit with a fedora and a skinny black tie?
Yeah.
Head to Goodwill, right?
Absolutely. So we got our costumes. Jeff played the butler.
Yeah.
Which, that wasn't too difficult to find
But I do remember when you showed up for shooting, you came in with the black cocktail.
And tails. Yeah.
Where did you get that?
Oh, just, you know, from my closet.
That's normal. Were you a magician before? So Norm kind of explained a little bit of what the movie was about. We were the Blues Brothers, so we filmed your, what car was that?
It was an classic AMC Hornet.
That's right. That was the Bluesmobile. And man, we drove all around town filming, filmed up on Spring Street where you lived at the time, filmed on Pleasant Street, filmed on Route 2.
Oh yeah.
And then of course we had dance sequences. So the whole bit was your brother was possessed by punk rock.
Yep.
And we are called in to come and save him.
We were on a mission from God.
A mission from God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was funny. There's some really interesting parts. So your sister playing Mrs. Ray.
Yes.
She had the scenes where she's waiting for the Blues Brothers
to
exercise upstairs.
Yep. Yes.
And she's drinking down there with Reggie, the butler. Some great scenes there. I think I remember the one where when she was finished with her bottle of wine, we threw it against the wall and knocked the clock.
Knocked the clock off. Yes, to show the passage of time.
Passage of time,
yes.
Right? There were some great things around that. And then I remember we were saying, well, if it's a movie, we got to do the opening credits, MGM. And we're trying to think about there's a big lion roar.
Yes.
And so I just pivot my head and I look over at my dad and I go, yep, he's the one.
He's it. We put a wig on him.
We put the old golden wig on him. And we put paper up across the wall. And there's a little hole for his head.
Yep.
And his hands come up and his head goes in the thing and he does this fake roar, and then we overdubbed the lion.
Oh man, we thought of everything.
Yeah, it was a Lion King moment.
Definitely a family affair. Right?
Yes.
So then we filmed the Blues Brothers arriving, and we walked up the stairs to Little Court Reagan's bedroom. Killer showed up first, right? He was the priest. He played the priest.
That's right.
He showed up first, right. They brought him upstairs, and we talked to him later. He didn't remember much, but...
Yeah.
But we brought him upstairs, and he went into the room, and he was trying to save Court Reagan.
Yeah.
It didn't work out too well. So then he stops, opens the door, and says, "This is a job for..." The Blues Brothers. And then we zoom in on a poster of the Blues Brothers.
Oh, that was classic.
Yes. And that's when Norm and I show up as Jake and Elwood.
That was a great scene. I remember that because we had punk music blaring in the background, even though it was a silent film.
Yeah.
And we had my brother Brian as the possessed punk guy, choking Killer's throat, and the little priest collar was popping up, and the wind was blowing.
Grabbed him by the head.
What an awesome scene that was. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and then we proceeded to do dance moves a la the Blues Brothers movie, using the songs from the Blues Brothers movie.
That's right.
To try and rescue little Court Reagan.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate scene is when he becomes rescued.
And this is where the high-tech cinematography jumps in.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So we'll just walk it for the audience. So my brother at the time was, I don't know.
11, I think he said. Yeah, yeah.
So he's standing on the bed and we're doing these moves to get him unpossessed from punk music.
Yeah.
And on the count of three, everybody stopped and froze.
I think it was Shake Your Tail Feather, was it? I think it was Shake Your Tail Feather.
It could have been,
Yes, because we were doing all the moves.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so everybody froze. My brother jumped off the bed, ran into the bathroom, changed into a blues outfit, black.
Blues Brothers, yeah.
For an 11-year-old. That was a little difficult.
Tough to find
that one. Yeah. He put the sunglasses on, jumped back on the bed, got in the same position, and then we went 1, 2, 3, and we started filming again. And that came out so
seamless.
Yeah.
Seamless.
He had to do the reaction of, whoa, here I am. I'm a Blues Brother.
And then he jumped right into the Shake Your Tail Feather.
Yeah.
That was a fun. Yeah. But I have to pause here and say, the dance moves, I don't know if we ever gave you credit on the screen, but
Jeff was the choreographer.
Jeff was definitely the choreographer.
Oh, yeah.
He'd come in from stage left out of the film thing and come in doing this groovy shake into the scene. And I'm looking at him going, whoa, where'd he come up with that?
Oh, man.
Comic relief. Exit stage left.
Yeah, and then he finished his dance move and he went out the other side of the stage. That was really good.
Oh, classic. So as a treat, I mean, it's just the three of us right here talking about it, but we actually went back and spoke to the other three characters or actors that were in the movie. And when we come back, we're going to listen to how they remember filming The Exorcist Blues. So we will be right back.
A day at the beach is just a click away at Calm Seas Crafts of Hilton Head. If you're looking for ocean-inspired handmade gifts, search out Calm Seas on Facebook, Instagram, or Etsy. You'll find a wide variety of home decor gifts inspired by the colors of the sea. If you own a beach house or lake house or are just looking to spruce up your deck or pool area, Calm Seas may be just what you're looking for. Calm Seas creator Amy Woods encourages you to shop all her platforms.
If you see anything you love, message me and I can ship my products to you. I also do custom orders, and if you are ever in Hilton Head, visit one of my pop-ups at the local farmers markets. Thanks so much.
Calm Seas, where every day's a beach day.
Do you sometimes wake up dead? Are your ears bleeding? Do you find yourself putting your shoes on the wrong feet? Are everyday chores like changing your transmission, raising a barn in your backyard, or digging a 12-foot trench for a new sewer line too much for you to handle? You might need some help. There's a new additive on the market that might do the trick. Gozintu. Gozintu is a plastic-based liquid oil enhancer that you can add to your morning routine. Just 3 squirts of Gozintu in your morning coffee and you'll feel ready to face any challenge. Gozintu is not FDA approved and may cause serious side effects. Hearing loss, total paralysis, loss of taste, touch, and smell are just a few of the problems some test subjects have experienced. Others complained of lack of enthusiasm, hating their jobs, breaking out in hives, throat soreness, shortness of breath, and continuous overdrafts in their checking account. Gozintu is a pleasure inhibitor and basically won't do anything for you.
Consult your doctor or your boss before considering a trial dose of Gozintu. Gozintu, when you don't really care what goes into you.
Hi, back to the podcast.
And now we are joined by another cast member of the world-famous Exorcist Blues movie. We shot it in 1981, and joining me now is my sister, Amy Woods, direct from South Carolina, Hilton Head to be exact. Amy, thank you for being on the Fog podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's a joy to have you with us to discuss what must have been an unbelievably embarrassing moment for you to be a part of this movie that we shot.
That is an understatement.
So Amy played the part, Brian Broder played the part of Court Reagan, and Amy played the very small part of Court's mother, who was a drunk in this movie.
Right.
What do you remember? Do you remember me asking you to be in it, or what are your memories about it?
Well, I was 15 years old, and I remember thinking there is no way I am going to do any kind of movie with my older brother and his three friends. I will be embarrassed. No way. Convinced me to do it.
Yeah, we pretty much talked you into it, I'm sure. We pressured you to be in it, and we were desperate. I mean, you know, we had
you
to
probably
have...
probably offered me, like, candy or
could
something.
Could something. Well, we offered you booze, I think, except you were only 15, so it wasn't really booze.
No, we can't talk about that.
I think it was Xarex. I don't... It was something like that.
Yeah.
And do you remember where you got the outfit from, which we still have, as a matter of fact?
Yes, I do. From Mom's closet. It was quite a colorful...
Quite a number.
Polyester getup.
Yeah, and you wore these big glasses.
Yes, I don't remember where those came from.
And I think you had braces.
Oh, yes, I did have braces.
Yeah.
To make it all... so realistic.
You just played the part. It was great. It was a very small part. It was basically you got drunk in the kitchen. Yeah. With the butler, played by Jeff Gibbs.
I couldn't stop laughing. It was really embarrassing laughter more than anything.
I do remember that.
I think the drink was spilling out of my mouth.
It was. Yeah. But yeah. The absolute funniest part of the whole movie was not planned. Why don't you explain what happened?
Okay. I still have flashbacks of this moment because I was in Norman's house. I think his parents were home.
They were.
I believe his parents were home, which is the worst part of the whole thing. So I had to stagger up the stairs drunk, not really drunk, but pretending to be drunk.
Exactly.
And I held on to the handrail, which came out of the wall as I was climbing up the stairs.
Okay.
I wanted to die.
Let's say it didn't come out of the wall. You ripped it out of the wall.
No. It must have been loose because I wanted to die. I could not believe, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just broke their railing.
It was the funniest thing. And I remember everyone yelling, keep going, keep going. Yeah. That was... one of my most favorite memories of that movie.
And I remember his mom came out and said, don't worry, it's no, I wanted to die.
She was the sweetest. Norm's mom was the sweetest lady, yes.
She was.
Now, do you happen to remember, we had a world premiere of the movie on January 8th, 1982, at the Broder House.
Don't remember that at all. Nope.
Don't. Well, yeah, we had a big party. We had special napkins that we made up, and it was a big world movie premiere for The Exorcist Blues.
Do you have pictures from that? Because I don't remember it.
I don't think we have pictures. You must have been drunk. That's probably what it was.
Definitely, I was drunk.
You were drunk. Yes.
Zorax.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, Amy, thank you so much for going down memory lane with us and joining the Fog podcast.
And I don't know why my career hasn't taken off. I mean, I really thought after that I would be, you know, agents would be.
You know, you make a good point. You didn't get any other movie offers after this came out? No, that was it, huh?
Nothing.
Yeah. If we ever do a sequel, gee, we should consider that. Everybody's older. We should do a sequel. And we'll film it down at your house down on Hilton Head on location.
That would be wonderful.
Perfect. Okay. Well, get ready. We're writing the script now.
Okay.
Thank you once again, Amy.
Thank you.
And we are now joined by another actor that was in our movie over the summer of 1981. He played two different parts. He played a priest. He also played a prison guard. He's coming to us from, I believe, New Mexico by phone.
That is right.
I'm right.
Yep.
Bob
yep.
Killer Miller. Hello, Bob.
Oh my God, I haven't been called Killer Miller in years.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
And what we wanted to talk to you about today was the movie that you were in. But before I get into that,
right.
I do want to mention that as I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today, it dawned on me that you are almost like the fifth Beatle, because you were involved in everything that we did leading up to this movie. When we made the Oz Band back in November of 79, you were part of that video that we shot. Do you remember that?
I remember that. In fact, wasn't that the school's video camera? They had the.
Yeah.
I remember
yes.
they had like a backpack or something.
Yes.
It was like
it was a real to real
ectoplasmic machine.
Exactly. So, right. Do you remember? I believe because you got credited in the credits as being the thumb technician. You were the one that helped to lower the thumb during that video. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about that. I remember. So, because I had done work in the plays and in the auditorium.
Right.
I was one of the few people who had, they called it climbing permission. My parents had a sign off that if I fell right or died, and they were like, we don't give a shit.
So they signed it away. They signed away. No
so they
problem.
Signed off on it. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I would have done the thumb, because I would have been the only one of the group who could have gone up into the rafters and set that up and lowered it.
And then in spring, in March of 1980, the spring concert, do you remember the band we played at the spring concert? You were there for
I do,
that.
In fact. Yeah. Did I run the floodlight? I might have run the spotlight.
Yeah, you were part of the crew there. And then after that, the next thing would have been the movie in 1981. So like I said, you're like the fifth Beatle. You were there for all of it.
That is so funny. Oh, my God.
And you and I have been friends for, I know the movie was shot about 45 years ago. So you and I have been friends for probably 50 years, close to 50 years.
I was just going
to
say that. I'm going to say third or fourth grade.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into it now.
Sure.
Again, the summer of 1981. I don't know where we came up with the idea, but we came up with the idea to make a movie based on the Blues Brothers and the Exorcist Blues. So in the credits at the end of that movie, you are credited not only with the acting parts, but also road scenes filmed by Bob Miller. I think you filmed a lot of the scenes. Do you remember that?
I remember some of that. I'll be honest with you. The one that really sticks out in my head is the one when Amy was coming down the stairs and she ended up pulling the railing out of the wall.
Absolutely.
The railing for the stairs.
Absolutely.
She ended up pulling that out of the wall. And I mean, I think we were all kind of freaked out. And Norman's father was just like, that's okay. Oh, these kids are having fun. And it's like, all right.
So do you remember filming the parts of the priest?
You know, I vaguely remember when I opened that door and all the papers blowing around. I mean, obviously there was a fan in the room, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember how that all ended up happening.
And then I think Brian pulls you by the head and almost breaks your neck.
just add some dramatic flair to all of this.
I also the other scene that I remember was we shot at Riverbend School. We did it really early because we didn't want anybody to see us, and you had to walk Norman down the steps like you were the prison guard Jake Blues out of prison. And the funny thing I remember about that is I'm standing at the car, and you must have been filming at this point, and I had the whole getup on, and a car started to drive up the street, and I pulled the glasses and the hat off real quick because I was embarrassed. And you can see that in the scene. But I'm telling you, that summer was just a riot. It was just so much fun.
Oh, we had a great time. That's right.
So then, now you moved out west later on in life. You moved to California. So I have to ask you, when you moved out there, did you get any more acting?
No.
That was it, huh?
Well, I'm in sales. Isn't that a form of acting?
That's kind of acting. All right, Bob. Killer Miller, thank you so much for taking the time and going back down memory lane with us. Everybody else, Norm, Jeff, JT, we all appreciate you being on the Fog Podcast, and maybe we'll see you soon.
I hope so.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Hey, thanks for letting me be part of this. I appreciate it.
We are joined right now by one of the main characters of the movie. It's Norm's brother, Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Fog hats, fog heads. What's going on?
Hey, let me ask you, how old were you when we shot that movie in 1981?
I think 11.
So tell us, what are your memories kind of that leading up to the actual, before we filmed the movie?
I remember, you know, you two guys dressing up as Jake and Elwood and bombing around in the Hornet filming stuff. And so that's sort of my earliest memories of it is, oh, you're doing this project. And then somewhere in there, I get asked to be a supporting character.
Asked might have been a strong word.
That's true. It was, you're doing this, go upstairs.
I mean, you're 11 years old. What are you going to say, right?
Oh, I was in. I don't think I put up a struggle.
No,
I was in.
No, I don't think you did. So then going further, what are your memories of actual filming?
Yeah. Well, listen, I should add on top of this. I'm the little brother, right? I you got to remember, you know, I'm looking up to you guys. This is amazing to me, right? Like, this is just like, I cannot believe this is happening under my roof, never mind in the world. Right?
Are you trying to say that this might have you know, where you are today, it might have had something to do with where you ended up?
Yeah, right. A career in the media business, it's exactly all your fault. Yes. Well, you can see where my acting career went from that project. So I do remember all of the elements of production, everything that was in that house, from, you know, our dad doing the lion to the crazy banister scene to Amy, you know, being drunk at the kitchen table with the interrogation light. I have very clear memories of all
of that. And how about the scenes upstairs in the bedroom?
Well, my recollection of that stuff was you had a very clear vision. We weren't there saying, gee, what are we going to do? It was, this is what we're doing. Okay, you know, here's Killer Miller, and you're going to reach out and twist his head, and you're killing him, and we're going to have a fan, and we're going to throw debris, and it's like, it was all very clear.
The next thing that pops in my mind is the, first of all, the choreography. That I have to look over here at my friend, Mr. Gibby.
Oh, yeah.
That was something else. Do you remember that section doing the dances, the synchronized dancing?
Well, yeah. I mean, that is directly informed from the multiple times watching the Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
and, you know, right in the middle of the movie, the famous shake your tail feather scene with Ray Charles. Yeah. And again, not much questioned. It was, okay, here we're going to do all of this, and these are the dances, and okay, let's do them.
Yeah.
That was it.
You working in the business now, I mean, how much easier is it now to do something like that than it would have obviously was for us?
Well, I mean, obviously, exponentially easier.
Yeah.
Look at it differently, though. You're talking about over 40 years ago.
Right.
So what I always talk about with my colleagues is that this was an analog world. There was no digital anything.
Right.
So I'll speak to two very clear examples about this that still resonate with me. Number one is when Court Reagan, my character, is transformed and the possession of punk music has been defeated. Court, you know, miraculously in a frame transformation.
I mean, that was the ultimate point of the movie that we got to talk about.
Right. Well, there's an analog hard edit that happens, and that's accomplished in the camera, meaning you stopped filming.
Right.
You know, my brother and you, Dave, you both froze.
Hold our positions.
I ran to the bathroom. and it's funny because I don't remember who was in the bathroom. It might have been you, Gibby. But it was like I was getting dressed and I was all flustered. And whoever was in the bathroom was like, come on, man, hurry up. And we ran back and I assumed the position, you know, newly transformed. And we record. And that's one of my favorite memories is that was my one moment of acting where I had to go, oh, wow,
Punk is gone.
And now I'm a blues brother.
You nailed it too. And I remember we had to send the film out and we didn't know whether we got it. And I remember when I got it back in the mail and played it, and it was unbelievable how it came out.
Yeah.
So the other one that I remember is the audio, is how you guys created the audio soundtrack.
Oh, that's right.
And you know, you're just kind of piecing it together on like a boombox and rolling in vinyl record playbacks and trying to kind of hand splice it in an analog way.
That's right, because it was not a sound film. It was silent. So I remember at my house, I took LPs and I had to record the soundtrack while I was watching the movie and try to get it to sync on a cassette.
Yeah.
That we played when we played the movie.
Boy, low tech.
And not only is that an analog thing from back in the day, but it's a no budget, not just low budget, no budget technique.
Yeah. It's amazing that we pulled it off.
So Brian, you did. It was really good.
Yeah. So Brian, I got a question for you. So obviously Dave and I are great friends with Norm and have been for ages, but you're his brother, right? And yep. So you've got another kind of a different relationship with him. Did you look up to Norm? I mean, was he like, I don't think my little brother looked up to me. He was just too close in age. I mean, there's too much personal, you know, competition. There was what, 8 years between the two of you. So I'm just curious, was Norm kind of the guy you look to say, yeah, this is what I want to be?
Take a breath, brother.
That's a pretty leading question.
See, there might be a pre-movie answer to that and a post-movie answer to that.
Listen, of course, I looked up to him then. I look up to him now. He is one of my heroes, of course. But I will elaborate
Well said.
I will elaborate that.
Well said.
You know, when people ask me about my brother and when I talk about you, Norm, what I often tell them about is, you know, the impact of music that Norm had on my life. And it was I'm born in late 69. So if you think about the amount of music that comes out, that of course all of you, but especially, you know, my brother are into, that's the Who, that's the Beatles, it's the, you know, everything from Beach Boys, Earth, Wind and Fire. And then of course the Blues Brothers, right? So if you look at that 10 years of when I'm born all the way up to 11 years old and I'm in this crazy movie, think of what kind of impact that has on me. And you would joke about, well, I pursue a career in music and media. You can joke about that, but what I do on this planet is absolutely influenced by not only my brother, but all four of you guys. And that's no joke. That's true. And
that's cool.
And I'm thankful about that.
Oh, that's, you know, really
even
cool.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I can see that. That's definitely. I mean, because he influenced me. He got me. I didn't know about the Who until I went to your house. And Norm introduced me to Who's Next. I'd never heard it before, and I will never forget that day. Mm. And oh my gosh, that they were, you know, my favorite band from then on.
Yeah.
See, you guys would say, you know, I influenced you. Nancy would say, my wife would say, he did a bad thing.
bad thing.
he showed you bad music. But so Brian, thank you for the kind words. But here's something, you know, I reflect on. Now, when we were in our teens, we the four old guys, when we were young guys, We, as you say, we faked it. We had an air band, and then we did a no-budget movie, you know, with a handheld and everything. I mean, now we look at what you do in the media world, video, music. You really play music. You really make video and movies.
Oh, so, that's a good point.
So I should say I now look up to you and what you produce and create in the
very
world.
True.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So very true. Well, I have two things to say about that. One, you know, as you may know, I recently worked with Lou Marini. Right, yes. The Blues Brothers saxophone. Ooh, and I have to make a confession. I did not say, Blue Lou, I have this 8mm movie to show.
Oh, you missed that opportunity.
Yeah, I had to take a pass on that. You know? So I apologize.
Always forgiven.
In all seriousness, this is an interesting point. You know, many people, if you look back to the Oz days and then making Exorcist Blues, many people would just go up there and especially think about it, 1979, you know, and just lip sync and be punkers and like, aren't we cool? Like, where's the VIP room, you know? But you guys from the beginning in all of this had high concept, right? There was production value. And that's not to be joked about. That's from the thumb that came down and animated to the Septic Cinema's animation to all the stuff. Like, you, it's no fooling around. Like, you were doing real stuff. So that is to be noted.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. We'll take that.
So noted.
So thank you. One other quick question, Brian. What do you have a memory about the premiere?
Yeah, I do. I can close my eyes and see it. I can. You know what? Honestly, but my memory of that night, like playing it back, you know, you guys cueing the audio soundtrack and like getting it in sync, and it's projecting on the old school collapsible 8mm screen, right? My memory of that night is my dad. I remember just gut laughing at my dad coming out as the lion, the MGM lion, but in the room too, like how proud he was about it. Like, you know, like he was laughing along with that just as much as anybody. I mean, that's what I remember that night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man.
Well, there is a common, the theme of the podcast is really, you know, years and years of friendship between the four of us. And when you look back at it, what the kernel of that friendship is, the common, this sort of mischievous.
Kind of goofy, yeah.
Goofy, laugh, have enjoy, you know, don't ever be worried about that side of things. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I definitely see it there.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for giving us your insight and your memories on the making of the Exorcist Blues. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, look, thank you for having me part of it, never mind the podcast, but just asking me to be involved, because it's a great memory. And looking back at the film, it's just a snapshot. It's a little memory that's burned into my brain from those days. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely. All right, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, brother.
You guys take it easy.
All right, so that's a nice little recap, hearing from Amy, Brian, and Killer Miller. Kind of neat to hear from them.
Some great memories.
Yeah.
Echoes from the
throwbacks.
Past.
So once we wrapped the movie, we had to do, I think, a little bit of editing. We got it edited together. Mm-hmm. And then we planned a huge movie premiere at the Broder household.
Yes, we did. Yep. In the paneling room, as I remember it. And we prepped. We went to the movie theater and borrowed a bunch of napkins. And
yes, Sax Cinema napkins.
Became Septic Cinema.
Yes, you wrote over the actual logo of Sax Cinemas and made it Septic Cinema. They were great. You still have some of those, don't you?
Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I got everything from that era. But yeah, that was fun. And then we had everybody was together. And then again, it was a silent film, and Bondo put together a
great soundtrack.
So we finally got it onto a cassette. So then we had to rig it up so that we're going to show the movie on a projector, on a screen. And then we had the cassette tape that we had to sync it up and start it at the right time that we started the movie.
Yeah. We had a few false starts, as I recall.
Yeah. Appetizer, anyone?
Oh, man. But, I mean, it went over well. It was a big hit. Our parents, I think, were very proud of us.
Yes, they were.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that's a wrap on the Exorcist Blues, which means we have two episodes left.
Ooh.
And, you know, we've been hyping the very last episode of the season, which is coming up. But our next, I'm calling it sort of a rollover episode. We're going to talk about various things that we've done outside of...
A smorgasbord.
There you go. A smorgasbord. I'm going to give you a little tease on what the last episode is about. I'm going to do this one quick thing, and I don't know if you can hear it. Hold on, let me try it again. Let me try it again. This is a hint. That's it, I'm not giving you any more of a hint.
Even I don't know what it is.
I have no idea what that noise was.
Okay. Well, look, at everybody, thanks for listening to the Fog Podcast. Keep those emails coming. Call us anytime. And remember, the Fog Podcast has been brought to you by Calm Seas Crafts of Hilton Head. And we will see you on episode number 5. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye, y'all.
See ya.
The Fog Podcast is a Gibbrell Pandoli production and is recorded at Lennox Studios in beautiful downtown Athol, Massachusetts. The Fog Podcast is produced by Norm Broder, Jeff Gibbs, Dave Panicio, and James Taroli. All comedy bits and commercials were written and produced by the Fog Podcast crew. The Fog Podcast theme, Night Thunder, is performed by Abby Noyes. All sound effects and royalty-free music are courtesy of Upbeat. Thanks for listening. I'm your announcer, Natalie Heath.